The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Nice to have our stupa ceremony. Really nice to have us all there. Thank you. Today I'm going to talk about good and bad. Somebody mentioned that sometimes we misunderstand good and bad in Buddhism. Not good and evil, good and bad. But a little digression, good and evil. Evil implies an intention to do harm. Bad is less deliberate, more kind of innocent. You know, you still do harm, but it's not quite so intentional, and it's often not as bad. If you've got a dog, you don't say, oh, you evil dog. You might say, bad dog. And with any luck, the dog might even know what you mean. But you don't say evil dog, because you know it's not intentional. They're not trying to be harmful. They're just being dogs. And it's like us. We're just being people. And often what we say about what's bad is it's not the evil thing. It's more like clueless. You know, we do stupid things. We do selfish things. We break the precepts. And good is what is virtuous, helpful. And as I said, even evil in Buddhism is that which creates suffering, not something that's intrinsically evil in itself. It's that which creates suffering. It takes the judgment out of it. Evil beings, you know. Things that create suffering, people who do harm create suffering, maybe intentionally, and yet there's not that kind of judgment about an evil person. It's different. People can create a huge amount of suffering, as we know, through greed, hatred, ignorance. But a Buddhist wouldn't say that's an evil person. We would say they're doing evil deeds. Doesn't make them an evil person. If you say they're evil, then you're separating them from us. We're the good guys, they're the bad guys. And you've kind of got the split. But actually, we're all both good guys and bad guys. And we all have the mixture. We all have the seeds of creating harm within ourselves. It's what we do with them. In Cambodia, after the Khmer Rouge had done terrible things, you know, hundreds of thousands of people killed. And a few years later, a Western reporter went to Cambodia to see what was going on there. And he said, what happened to all the Khmer Rouge people? And he talked to somebody. He said, oh, one of them is just down the road. She does laundry. She does our laundry because she needs help. She's got no money. This is somebody who had betrayed, you know, lots of people. And this happened over and over. People would have forgiven those who had done terrible things to them. And this poor reporter just couldn't handle it. It frightened him because he thought, if you don't have like vengeance or, you know, what do you do with this? You've got these people who've done horrible things and you're accepting them and even helping them. What is this? He just could not understand forgiveness and not seeing the person as evil. They may have done terrible deeds, but maybe they've changed, and if we help them, maybe they will not do those things anymore. Maybe we all learn from our mistakes, not labeling somebody as an intrinsically evil person, but actually seeing them as kind of like us, you know. Interesting story. Because we're so steeped in the good and evil thing, you know, it's hard to let go of. So often Buddhists, rather than saying good and bad, we'd say wholesome or unwholesome, skillful or unskillful. This can sound a little bit, you know, a little bit euphemistic, but actually there's a good point there. Wholesome, something that gives something good, that's beneficial, that's nourishing, that helps rather than harms. Skillful, a skillful means, something that helps beings, helps the situation, eases things, rather than create an opposite, create problems, you know. Good and bad is pretty sort of hard and fast, but skillful or unskillful, wholesome or unwholesome, because we know what is wholesome or skillful by the consequences. The consequences will tell us, was that a wholesome act, a wholesome thing to say? We wouldn't think of wholesome, really. We don't really think like that. But something is helpful, beneficial, something skillful, rather than something that's unskillful. And we can tell by the consequences. If you've upset somebody, likely it was unskillful, you know. But it's not that judgment in the same way. We might say, that was a really serious mistake, that was a really bad mistake. But if we don't have to say, I'm a really bad person, or you don't say an evil mistake, or I was evil, or I am evil, hopefully. If we do that, we've got a lot of trouble on our hands. We might say, I was bad. And actually, that's a mistake. We're not bad. We're just deluded, you know. We may have done something unwise or harmful. Doesn't make us a bad person. I don't have to grab onto it and make it mine. My attribute, I'm a bad person. I'm a horrible person. Sometimes you might, you know, some of us might think, actually, I am a bad person. You know, I have horrible thoughts. One of our monks called it innate badness. The feeling that there's something fundamentally wrong with us. I think lots of people have this to a greater or lesser degree. Not all of us feel like we're axe murderers just teetering on the brink. But that we have, you know, we have harmful tendencies. We're really, really greedy. Or we have a whole lot of anger we don't want to do with, you know. Or there's just something wrong with us and we don't know what it is. Or things have happened to us in the past and we're sullied. Or we've done things that we deeply regret. We can't seem to let them go. The idea of original sin can kind of play into this, thinking, well, we're born in sin, you know, pretty hard to claw our way out of. But for Buddhists, of course, we're born with Buddha nature. All beings are. And we may have karmic tendencies, which we do. Of course we do. But we're not bad just by the virtue of being here, which is helpful. There's no such thing as innate badness. No matter what we've done, no matter what's happened to us, no matter what we think of ourselves, there ain't no such thing as innate badness. And if we think we have it, it doesn't make us bad for thinking so. We just need to work with it, convert it, and soften it with kindness, you know. The self-hatred is a peculiarly Western concept. You know, the Dalai Lama burst into tears when someone explained it to him. Self-hatred, self-judgment. I talk about these a lot because they're so pervasive and we don't even recognize them because of that. They just kind of color everything for many of us. If we don't recognize them, we can't do anything. For some of us, there's just a mild unease. There's something wrong with this picture, something wrong with me. I'm not sure what it is, but I'd like to change. I like to do something about myself. And that can be a good thing. It's not necessarily a bad thing to have that unease, you know. Otherwise, we wouldn't change. We'd just be, oh, here I am, I'm fine. Most of us, some of us feel that way. Most of us don't, actually. We feel there's some change needs to be made. That's why we're here, really. To train ourselves and work on our faults. We can only do that when we recognize that we have things that we need to change. That really helps us. If we didn't have that unease, we wouldn't start. But we have to be careful not to get kind of crippled or drown in it, but to take it and use it. Use it to the good. The sense of being not quite acceptable is another aspect. I'm not quite acceptable the way I am. I'm not good enough in some way. If only people knew what goes on in my mind or what had happened to me. They'd run away in horror, you know. Maybe they would, maybe they wouldn't. I think we're all kind of a lot more the same than we might think. None of us is squeaky clean. We all have our faults, our mistakes, the things we've done, things that have happened to us. None of us is perfect. In The Wild White Goose, which many of you have read, the introduction is extremely helpful. Reverend Master Jiyu talks about going to the East to do something about herself. She thought her question was, why do bloodshed and cruelty exist? This is not that long after the Second World War. And she'd seen her friends, you know, seen friends killed, had people, planes dropping bombs in her town and so forth. And she was, you know, she's 15 years old and this started, and she thought, you know, why is life like this? She was really angry. So she goes to the East to get an answer to this. Why do bloodshed and cruelty exist? And then finally she realized that the really question she needed to ask was, why was she the way she was? She had the potential for bloodshed and cruelty also. It wasn't just, you know, the enemy, the Nazis and so forth. It was everybody. We all have this potential. Nobody is perfect. Nobody is the good guys versus the bad guys. Yes, people do terrible and awful things, and yet we all have the potential. Who knows what we'd be like if we were born in completely different circumstances, in a completely different setting, and if what we now consider to be completely awful and unacceptable was the norm, you know? If you're a good person, you do these things. If you're a bad person, you don't do them. Hard to stand against that, actually. But most, fortunately, most societies like peace. All the world religions, the major ones, say compassion is the fundamental thing. Based on compassion, it's that what people twist them into that creates the trouble. So Reverend Master went to the East to do something about, or to find the answer to her question, why is there bloodshed and cruelty? And then she realized, why did she have hatred and cruelty in herself? She had to face these things in herself to be willing to see that she had the same potential, that she could do awful things too if she did not train herself. She wasn't an axe murderer or anything. She was a perfectly normal person. She was just angry because of, you know, the life she'd had as a young person. But she wanted to do something. She didn't. She said, however much other people may have disliked me, I disliked myself a lot more. I had to change. I had to do something. And this is the difference between blaming the world for our problems and seeing that we have created them for ourselves. She created her own suffering. It was not created by other people, no matter what it looked like. And it was the way she took things that made the difference between complete misery, which is the first part of the book, and joy when things changed for her. And the whole of her diary is about this change, about how at first she took everything negatively. It was really, really hard. Totally different culture between Japan and England. Completely misunderstood all kinds of things people did. Yes, there was prejudice. She was from, you know, the Allies who had bombed Japan and so forth. And she was a woman, a foreigner. So it was, yes, there was prejudice. But she took it harder than she need have. And she was able to turn it around. When she had that transformation, that pivotal moment, when she realized, I could be wrong, this completely changed everything. To be willing to see things in a completely different way, not as good and bad, good is what I like and what agrees with my views, and bad is what the other people think, but to see things totally differently, to be willing to let go of our resentment and our ideas of good and evil. This is a good person, that is a bad person. This person was fine, that person did something bad and unacceptable. When you let go of that, over and over again, things take on a completely different light. And for Reverend Master Ji, it was dramatic. For most of us, it's more gradual. Gradually we begin to see, ah, look what I'm holding on to. Ah, this is just my opinion about this person. Ah, maybe we can see this another way. Ah, maybe that's why that person's upset. Ah, maybe I did something unkind there, unskillful, that I didn't even notice until I got the consequences. I've upset somebody. Oh, I was selfish. I wasn't thoughtful. I'm sorry. Completely different view. And we go back and forth. Sometimes we get this aha moment, and then we go and do something dumb again. None of us suddenly becomes, perfect. Reverend Masuji, you didn't. She had her moments later. But it really, 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 really helped her to have that pivotal moment. I could be wrong. I cannot take my opinions as absolute truth. There's something else going on here. Furthermore, she says, I can take everything that happens to me as for my good. Not saying it's happening in order to teach me, but I can take them to the good. I can use it to help me. And this was incredibly helpful. It saw her through a whole lot of situations that for many other people, they would not have made it through. And she did. And here we have this today. To realize that one causes one's own suffering, fundamentally. Now, you can't really say that to someone whose children have all been murdered. Oh, it's all your fault. No, it's not like that. But by and large, in our daily lives, we create a lot of our own suffering by our attitude of mind, by how we look at things. And ghastly things do happen. However, you don't want to wreak vengeance on the person, but to simply stop them doing it. You don't have to then be vengeful. That just creates more suffering. To let go of our resentment, our ideas of what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, good and bad, the deserving and the undeserving, the worthy and the unworthy. Often if we do that, we put ourselves in the unworthy category and the undeserving and the un-everything. And if we can be charitable towards other people, we can be charitable much more easily towards ourselves. And again, we tend to go back and forth. One minute, we're completely accepting of something really difficult. I know this has really helped me. And then we can be a total ass. Our opinions of how other people should be, how the world should be, and how we should be. To relinquish our view of these things while still trying to do our best. Trying to do what is wholesome, skillful, kind, generous. If we can assume the basic goodness of people and speak to that, rather than assume untrustworthiness or harmful intentions, it really helps. It helps us, it helps them. Seeing people and treating them as just like ourselves, not separate, not the good people and the bad people. We don't have to be foolish and naive. I can completely trust this person, even though they look a bit like a bandit. I'm sure they've got Buddha nature. We don't want to be foolish. However, to know that there's basic goodness in everybody and to speak to that. We don't have to give them our money, but we can speak to that. If we can do this with other people, to see them as not separate from ourselves, to see that there's goodness in all beings, then we can more easily do it with ourselves. We have basic goodness too, and not just a mass of mistakes and, foolishness. We actually have wisdom. We have kindness. We have generosity. Maybe we're actually quite a nice person, and we don't tend to see it that way. That's self-judgment, self-putting down, self-hatred can go quite deep. To recognize it and not fall into it. To accept other people as they are helps us to accept ourselves as we are. And still we need to do something. to accept the things in ourselves that we'd rather not look at. Rav Masterji said, the real question you should have asked was, when is the first arising of selfishness? When is the first arising of selfishness? To see our selfishness, our preoccupation with ourselves, our wants and desires, our opinions, our fears, our view of ourselves, our everything, and see them for what they are, and to accept them, but not completely believe them. See that self-view, self-partiality. Ah, look at that. There it is. I don't have to be run around by that. To accept these things, to see they're there, then we can work on them. If we pretend they're not there, we can't do anything, really. And not to label these things as good or bad, that doesn't help, but to see them. Ah, selfishness, yes, it's a label in a sense, and yet, if we can recognize it for what it is, we all have selfishness, and up to a point it's useful. We have to feed ourselves, we have to take care of ourselves and our families, we have to take care of our responsibilities, and still, we don't have to grab on as though this is the most important thing in the world. I have my responsibilities, my things that I need to take care of, and they all have theirs. You all have yours. They're all connected. Nothing more important than another. And that's the helpful thing, to see that it's not a great difference. I'm the most important person, and everybody else is secondary. Which sounds kind of silly, but in fact, we do tend to think that way. But to see that, the first arising of selfishness, well, it's innate, I think. The selfish wanting food, you know, feed me, feed me. And we have to train that as we get older, as we grow up. We see, ah, there's other beings here too. And maybe they're not that different from me, you know. So what is wholesome and skillful? And what is unwholesome and unskillful? Selfishness is unskillful and often unwholesome. Grabbing something for ourselves at the expense of somebody else. Not helpful. Leads to suffering for us and for others. And as I said, we all have it. We all have selfishness. And what are we going to do with it? To train with it. To recognize it. To accept it. But not just give in to it, to train with it. That's the thing. And that's what Rav Masterji learned. That's what she had to do. Not just to see everything from her own point of view. This is how it is. But, this is how I see it. And this situation can help me, actually. Help me learn to relinquish my own view, my own self-partiality, and think of others. Use things to the good, use them to help, rather than as a suffering. Seeing others as like ourselves helps us let go of that selfishness, because we're not seeing ourselves as the most important thing. I see this all the time. Sorry. Never mind. I think we have to do it anyway, because it's vital, actually. Like in the Wild White Goose from Master's Diary, that pivotal moment, I could be wrong, you know. It's not just about me and my views. I could be completely wrong about all this. Totally changing everything. Thinking everything is one way. We've been thinking completely upside down. Thinking, I am good and those people are bad. Or I'm bad and those people are good. It's still separation, cutting something off. Deluded, actually. But to relinquish that, accept ourselves, accept other beings, and then work with that. The more alike than we might think, we all have our tendencies, our patterns, our history, we're all a little different, and yet we're not as different as all that. We all have the potential for great virtue, great goodness, and for great harm. All of us have all of that. None of us is all good or all bad. We all have all of it together. And what are we going to do with it, you know? What are we going to choose when we have a choice? And beyond all of this, Buddha nature embraces everything, the good, the bad, and the ugly, the wholesome, the unwholesome, skillful, unskillful, all our horrible little thoughts and fantasies, the axe murderers, the people who do great, wonderful gifts of works of kindness for people. All of us are part of Buddha nature, through and through, all our thoughts and things, through and through, beyond good and bad, beyond our little views, beyond anything we can conceive of. And we are all part of that. And we can entrust ourselves and everybody else to that completely. So that is beyond all the good and bad, right and wrong little views. And that's our tip for the day. Thank you.